I actually firmly believe that learning to play poker can make the world a better place because it makes people into better decision makers. But that's what I enjoy, the challenge. I enjoy the strategy. You know, I enjoy that it makes me think better. Sure, would it be nice to like just completely clean up financially? Yeah, great. But I've never sat down and been like, oh man, I wish I played poker way back when.
Welcome to another episode of Low Rollers, the first episode of the solo host era of the gambling industry podcast that is now half as good as it used to be, but still twice as good as most of the schlock out there. I am Eric Raskin, the senior editor of Casino Reports and other Third Planet Media properties, and I am not joined by Jeff Edelstein. Following up on last week's partial announcement, Jeff is now the host of the Business of Betting podcast. So we're each solo hosting separate shows. You should subscribe to Business of Betting if you aren't already. The news that we were breaking up the band here at Low Rollers generated quite an outcry on social media. Multiple listeners, meaning at least two. Okay, exactly two. Two listeners responded to the news with sadness and or anger. But as we said last week, Jeff will be back as a recurring guest on this podcast. But in the meantime, I have a fantastic guest to kick off this new era. Coming up shortly, I will be talking to Maria Konnikova, writer, podcaster, poker player, poker ambassador. Really broke through in our world, the gambling world, with her 2020 book, The Biggest Bluff. So I think you'll enjoy my conversation with her. That's coming up in just a few minutes. But first, some quick thoughts on the latest prediction market news. And I should note that as we split into these two separate podcasts, Low Rollers is going to lean more into casino topics than sports betting topics, so that may mean less prediction market talk here. But this news is relevant to the casino side, or at least the online casino side, because it impacts DraftKings and FanDuel, which, as we all know, aspire to be online casino companies much more than they aspire to be online sports betting companies. If only a few more states would welcome them as online casino companies. Anyway, a mountain of prediction market news this week, as usual, but what really caught my eye was the introduction of parlay betting on Kalshi Monday night that really strongly resembled everyone else's same-game parlay products. You know, build a big plus-money parlay, and in this case with Kalshi, you see if someone will then take the opposite side and be willing to lay a lot to win a little. So Kalshi is off and running with that, and the next day, Tuesday, DraftKings stock and Flutter stock both went way down. Great job by my colleague Daniel O'Boyle jumping on the connection here and writing an article for InGame about it. Some of the numbers from his article, DraftKings market cap declined $2.5 billion, and Flutter, parent company of FanDuel, theirs went down $5.5 billion on Tuesday morning. Rush Street Interactive also went down, as did Genius Sports and Sport Radar, these data companies the regulated sports books have to use, and I guess prediction markets don't have to use them. And clearly, sports betting via Kalshi, Polymarket, Robinhood, etc. Let's just call it what it is. It's sports betting. Clearly, it's gaining steam. More and more people are becoming aware of it. The betting volume at Kalshi on both Saturday and Sunday set new high water marks for them. Maybe the South Park episode helped a little, made more people aware of them. I should point out, it's not all sunshine and roses for the prediction markets. Apparently, the CFTC sent a letter warning that nobody should assume they'll be able to keep taking sports bets indefinitely. Plus, we have a government shutdown happening. Who knows how that impacts these federally regulated operators? Maybe they can just self-certify that they don't need a functioning government. Things are also still completely up in the air in terms of who will be the next chair of the CFTC. But it's hard not to look at most of this from the perspective of DraftKings, FanDuel, and all the other regulated operators and see what's happening with prediction markets as bad news for them and their stock prices, unless or until they launch their own prediction markets. Of course, if New York legalizes online casino next year, all of DraftKings and Flutter's problems go away. Maybe that's a slight exaggeration to say all their problems go away, but only slight. All right, this has been a really long time to listen to my voice without anyone else's voice to break things up. I've tested your limits there, but it is time for a second voice and some actual conversation. So Enjoy a few seconds of music, and when I come back, I'll be joined by Maria Konnikova. It is my pleasure now to welcome to Low Rollers a fellow writer, podcaster, and poker player who has achieved greater success in all three disciplines than I have. She's written multiple New York Times bestsellers. She has nearly $1 million in live tournament poker cashes. And I'm a big fan of her podcast, Risky Business, which she hosts with Nate Silver. They describe it as a podcast about making better decisions, which I have to question if she's really an authority on that, because she made the decision to appear on Low Rollers this week. Nevertheless, I'm delighted to have her. Maria Konnikova, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Eric. It's a pleasure. Thanks for that delightful introduction. Way too kind. Way too kind.
Well, it is, I think, factually true on all three fronts, but we won't debate that. I know that you and Nate were friends first and then decided to try podcasting together. How did you and Nate first become friends? What's your meet cute story there?
You know what? Neither Nate nor I remember. We've tried to answer that question multiple times. By the way, you know, I know this is a podcast. We're live. I apologize. I'm in New York City. There will be sirens. So this okay. is just adding to the authentic atmosphere of the thing.
Right.
But yeah, Nate and I, we met in New York, but we're both part of the kind of New York writer journalist community. And so we think that we probably met at a book party or some other event, but we honestly can't remember. We do remember that we then, you know, we became Twitter buddies. We exchanged emails, notes, like kind of had an acquaintanceship for a while, and then went out for drinks one night. And that was the beginning of like actual friendship, where we started hanging out more. And then this was long before I played poker.
Right.
And then when I started playing poker, like, I think that even deepened our connection, because, you know, Nate is a poker player, someone who used to play professionally. And so it was something that we could share and do together and bond over. So I think that kind of it progressed over the years. But at this point, I've known him for over a decade. Not quite sure how much longer, because once again, neither Nate nor I actually remember when we first met. And I don't think there's any way of figuring it out, short of comparing calendars from, you know, 10, 12 years ago and being like, okay, were you at this party? Were you at that party? You know, where were you that night?
Right. Okay. But now you have been doing the podcast together for a little while, mm-hmm. and it's evolving. It recently switched from once a week to twice a week. Sometimes a podcast starts with a particular format or framing, and then it gradually sheds that, and it just becomes a place for the host mm-hmm. to talk about whatever they want to talk about. Kind of a way of setting up to ask you, how do you feel about the making better decisions framing after doing it for a little while? Do you find it restrictive at all?
No, I mean, I think that both of us really see the world through that lens, you know, of risk and risk assessments and decision making. You know, it's what I studied. It was what my PhD was in. And even though I'm a writer and I've always been a writer professionally, and, you know, I think about a lot of different things, I do bring that lens to a lot of how I view the world. And I think Nate does too. You know, I come from the psychology angle. He comes from the math statistics angle. But it comes very naturally to us. You know, it wasn't a frame that was imposed on us. It was a frame that we decided we wanted to do because we thought it would make for an interesting show and enable us to talk about topics that everyone's talking about while giving a unique kind of frame of mind, a unique imprint to those things that would help people gain a slightly different perspective. I hope you agree with that as a listener. Now, like, yeah. For example, this week, one of the two episodes, the first one that airs on Wednesday, October 1st, is about Eric Adams dropping out of the mayoral race. Now, this is not exactly a topic that has been undercovered, but we approached it from a game theoretic lens, talking about, you know, the game theory, the strategy behind, the meta strategy behind, the timing, the way it was done, you know, broader kind of strategic issues in the Democratic Party, et cetera, et cetera. And so I don't think anyone has actually talked about it from that angle. And so that's, I think, what we bring to the conversation, and one of the things that distinguishes our podcast from others. And we do talk about what we want to talk about. We just happen to have a particular approach to it.
Yeah, and I think that the making better decisions is one of those framings that you can kind of find a way to apply it to just about any topic
Exactly,
if you had to. Well,
that's the beauty of it, is it's both narrow and broad.
right. Well, so you mentioned Eric Adams and the politics and all that, and so I'm curious to ask you a politics related question. I am very much I know it's dangerous, but I'm very much on the political left, as are you. The one thing that I don't enjoy sometimes about risky business is when Nate goes out of his way to both sides an issue. You two don't quite get into arguments on air. This isn't one of those like stupid manufactured sports debate shows, but I'm just curious, does it bother you the way it sometimes bothers me when he kind of tries to say both sides are equally to blame on certain things?
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes, it bothers me enough that I call him out on it. We've had episodes where I was like, Nate, this is too important. Like, please stop both siding it. Because, I know him. We've been friends for a long time. And I think one of the reasons we can be co-hosts is that we're able to say that to each other. And, it doesn't affect our friendship. But the other thing is, I know that it's also kind of a rhetorical thing that he does, and that, he's a former debater. It's just kind of the way he approaches a lot of things. And sometimes I just kind of smile and say, okay, but there have been moments where, like, I felt compelled to say, okay, no. And to his credit, when I do, like, push back that forcefully, he normally is like, okay, fine, maybe you're right in this particular time. But that doesn't happen often.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think it would be a very interesting podcast if we always agreed 100% on everything, and
Right.
if we always just kind of parroted what the other person was saying.
Right.
That said, we do agree on a lot, right? There's a lot of
Right.
common ground there, so
Right.
I think that that's also necessary. And
And it's
when we
not even like
disagree,
he's on the opposite political side from you. He's
no,
just
no,
kind
he's on
of
the
he's
same
middle-ish,
side.
but right. All right. Well, a less sensitive topic perhaps than politics. Let's talk a little poker. You came to the game long after the boom years of the moneymaker era. Do you ever let yourself daydream about, boy, I wish I'd been around then to exploit all the terrible players who were giving a poker a try?
No, absolutely not. I mean, people have said, "Oh, you chose to come to poker at a very bad time." And I was like, I don't know anything else. That's when I came. And the game interests me, right? This isn't like my career choice because I want to make a lot of money. I became interested in the game because I was interested in, the game theory, the psychology of it. And that's still the reason I'm still a poker player. I'm an ambassador for PokerStars. I've clearly, like, devoted a lot of time to not just playing the game, but to spreading the word about why it's such an important cognitive tool, an important learning tool, an important teaching tool, why I actually firmly believe that learning to play poker can make the world a better place because it makes people into better decision makers. But that's what I enjoy, the challenge. I enjoy the strategy. I enjoy that it makes me think better. Would it be nice to, like, just completely clean up financially? Yeah, great. But I've never sat down and been like, oh man, I wish I played poker way back when. I also hate counterfactual thinking that way because everything in your life makes you who you are. And maybe had I gotten the poker bug, just out of college, I wouldn't have had my career, and I would have actually just, like, played poker.
Right.
As opposed to, I mean, I don't actually think that's true because writing is the only thing I ever wanted to do. And, when I was 5 years old, I told my family I was going to be a writer. And it's just something that I can't not do. So I don't actually think that would be the case, but when you engage, everything would be different,
Right.
if you change the past in such a big way.
Right. That's not even just like a little butterfly effect sort of thing. That's a major change that but and I guess I suppose if you look at a lot of the people who got into poker around that time, so many of them, even if they made a lot of money in the short term, are long burnt out on poker by now and not
Oh,
in the game
absolutely.
anymore.
Yeah, and I think that, one of the, I got very lucky in that I asked Eric Seidel to be my coach and my mentor, and that he agreed because his approach to poker, I think, is what, in fact, his love for it is pure. Like he loves the game. He's passionate about kind of the game elements of it. He's not in there for money or fame, and
Yeah.
that's why he has both
Yeah.
and has lasted.
And speaking of his fame, of course, a lot of us were first introduced to Eric through the movie Rounders. Did you meet him before you'd even seen Rounders, or what was your order on that?
No, Rounders was the only time I had ever seen poker being played. So in my
Okay.
mind, the only way to play poker was in some shady underground clubs where Teddy KGB was, at the door. So I didn't know anything about poker except for Rounders. And actually, the reason I approached Eric was I was trying to figure out who could coach me. And when I came up with the idea for this, for the book.
Right.
And I obviously Googled like best poker players of all time, did all of that. But then I was also like, I wonder if the guy from Rounders is still around. So Rounders very directly led me to Eric.
Interesting. Okay. You mentioned the sort of the underground clubs and the cash games of Rounders. I personally do not enjoy playing cash games. I like the idea of tournaments or sit and goes, and this is the amount I'm spending. The game has a start and a finish. I find cash games more stressful and less fun. Where are you on cash games? Do you play them much?
Oh no, I'm a tournament player. I have played cash, but mostly when I play cash, it's because, PokerStars has asked me to be on some sort of big cash stream.
Okay.
So basically the only cash I play are streamed, televised games that I'm playing for another reason. But I do not enjoy it. And if given the choice, I would always choose tournaments. I find them much more intellectually satisfying.
Okay. And what about games other than Hold'em? Have you gotten into any of the other games?
I mean, I've learned some of the other games. So, one of my original coaches for people who've read The Biggest Bluff, they know this, but for those who haven't, was, in addition to Eric Seidel, the other person I worked with the most was Phil Galfond, who's one of the best PLO players in the world. And so I got into PLO a little bit, and I'm very lucky that I have, someone like him who I can ask different questions. But yeah, I've gotten into some mixed games. I find them interesting, but I don't, it's not like I have endless time. Like right now, I am working on my next book. I have a twice weekly podcast. I have a Substack that I try to do weekly. I'm working on some screenwriting projects that I can't go into detail on, but there are multiple of them, and one of them is just taking up all my time right now. And so it's one of these things where at this point I'm only really playing poker at the PokerStars stops that kind of are the important events. So my last poker stop was APT Barcelona, and my next poker stop will be NAPT, which is the North American Poker Tour in Vegas in November, and then I'll play the Wynn championship, like some of it, not the whole series. But yeah, that's, at this point, because my time is so limited, I want to be competitive, right? And so I would never play if I'd stop playing if I thought I was no longer competitive. So I'm still getting coaching, I'm still studying, I'm still taking it quite seriously. And because of that, I just don't have time to start, messing with mixed games.
Okay. Now when I
But I want
interview,
to at some point in the future. We'll see. Yeah.
right. Yeah, and I as someone who I consider myself, a winning player at Hold'em, probably I don't have any edge in anything else, and I don't have a big edge in Hold'em, but it's more just sort of the fun and the challenge sometimes of trying the
Yeah, for
different
sure.
games. But when I interviewed you last year, you mentioned that the movie rights to The Biggest Bluff had been optioned, which, of course, that's step one of about 20 steps to getting a movie made. But is there any progress, any update on whether we may
No,
eventually see a Biggest Bluff movie?
the movie rights are once again available, as
Oh,
so
okay.
often happens in
Right.
Hollywood.
Right.
So unfortunately, that particular project died. But the biggest bluff is still very much alive. And there's a screenplay that I wrote, and we're still very much working towards getting it made.
Got it. Okay, and then the last topic I'm curious about is I know you got a tiny bit into sports gambling by filling out a March Madness bracket. At any further dabbling since, did that ignite
Nope.
any other interest in sports? Nope.
Absolutely not. I've still never placed a single bet on sports. Don't plan to. I'll probably do another March Madness bracket next year for the podcast. But no, it was a fun exercise to make my first ever bracket, and I look forward to making my second bracket next year for the same event.
For the same stakes,
Yes,
which
for
is
the same stakes of $0.
right.
Well, that was also it was for people who listen to Risky Business. If you recall, I had Monty McNair, who's slightly more experienced than I am at filling these out, help me. And so a part of our agreement was that I wasn't actually going to use it to try to make money, that we were doing this for the podcast and as a fun experiment, not as a way of getting me into sports betting.
Right. But and you got to experience a little of the sweat of sports betting, but I guess it wasn't enough to make you want to actually dive in and put any
No,
real money on the
I'm
line.
not a gambler, Eric. I
Right.
actually like that stuff doesn't excite me. Like
Right.
I was more it made it more fun to watch. It was interesting, but it was more the competition with Nate. I just wanted to beat Nate. I
Right.
did not, spoiler alert, Nate won.
All right. Well, hopefully next year, even the score.
I hope so.
All right. So, anyone listening here, the places to go, Risky Business, available on whatever podcast app anyone uses. And your Substack, which you mentioned called The Leap, is at mariakonnikova.substack.com. Anywhere else we should direct people?
No, those are good places. Between the two of those, you'll get all the updates about what I'm doing.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to come on Low Rollers,
Of
and
course.
best of luck with your busy schedule. And it's a little ways off in the distance, but best of luck on March Madness bracket next year.
Thank you so much, Eric. I really appreciate that. This was a lot of fun.
Okay, my thanks again to Maria. Going forward, the interview segments may be a little longer than the 15 to 20 minutes you've gotten used to with Low Rollers, but this week Maria only had so much time available, so we kept that one a little shorter than the interviews will likely be in the weeks ahead. Speaking of the weeks ahead, the podcast will return to a Thursday drop after this week. This week is just the rare Wednesday posting, because I'm off this Thursday and Friday. Friday, we're taking a family trip to Pittsburgh. My daughter is a college freshman, so it's our first parents' weekend. And as long as I was taking Friday off, I decided to take Thursday off too. I'll be fasting for Yom Kippur. This is the last remaining Jewish observance that I regularly partake in. And, I've tried to work through a fast day in the past. Decided to give myself a break this year. So that's why you're getting the pod on a Wednesday instead of a Thursday. But next week, back to the usual Thursday posting. Before I sign off, though, I will continue to regale you with some sort of gambling tale to close the show, as I've done in weeks past. And I'll start this with a pitch for another Jeff Edelstein property. If you're not listening to or watching Primetime Props every Friday, check it out. It's a great show. My betting bankroll has been swelling as a result of acting on some of my favorite props that they bring up. And last Friday, Jeff brought up what is known in our work Slack as a Cal Spears special, where you same game parlay a player to go under on receptions but over on receiving yards and get a big payout because those are reverse correlated. And if you add a touchdown, the payout gets huge. Jeff suggested that Colts receiver Adonai Mitchell, an appropriate name on Yom Kippur Eve, Adonai Mitchell, he was getting the start with Alec Pierce hurt. He's a big play receiver, a deep threat, so the Cal Spears special was Mitchell under 2.5 receptions, over 30.5 receiving yards, and an anytime touchdown. That pays plus 3,400, 34 to 1. Early in the game, Mitchell makes a catch for 9 yards. And then in the second quarter, he makes a phenomenal grab, spins away from his defender, goes streaking down the sideline, in for like a 75-yard score. except the ball pops out of his hand a foot from the end zone. He was untouched. There's no reason for the fumble. He just got careless, and it squirts out of his hand, goes through the back of the end zone, touchback. Mitchell's line should be 284-1. Instead, it's 284-0, and the bet is dead, unless he gets a rushing touchdown or a fumble recovery touchdown. Just a brutal beat to lose a brilliant Cal Spear special. And now I'm rooting for Mitchell to catch at least one more ball so I can feel better that that bet would have lost anyway. Plus, I'm rooting for Mitchell because I have him in my DraftKings cash lineup. I'm surprised he wasn't more owned in cash. At just $3,100, he seemed to me like a great punt to open things up and let me get to Puka, McCaffrey, James Cook, and even pay up for the Lions defense. My cash lineup did great, by the way. Yay me. Anyway, thankfully, Mitchell managed one more reception in the second half. Maximum pain averted. Now, I won't bother to tell you how little money I risked at 34-1, but the podcast is called Low Rollers. You can probably make a decent guess and then realize just how little this almost brutal beat actually matters. The point is not the money. The point is more to celebrate the Cal Spear special and my old co-host Jeff's near-perfect application of it. Until next time, this has been Low Rollers, small stakes and hot takes.